Welcome to the Amateur Movie Review Hour. I'm Trevor, and with me I have Megs, and I have Josh.
Hello.
Hoo-ah!
Oh. Little Scent of a Woman.
That was
know about good. That one?
That was exciting.
I might be sniffling a little bit. That's why I want to do Scent of a Woman. So okay. Every time I do that, I think about that.
Okay.
It's not a gag. I'm actually still a little sick, but it's okay.
No worries.
Not sick, but.
Sick, but.
Not sick, but.
Just sick.
Just sick, but.
Two words.
You'll be doing the sniffling in the meantime.
It could be a little bit. Just a warning, you know.
Have either of you ever fallen for a confidence scam?
No.
Good.
Not fallen for. I have got slightly pulled in for a second, like on a phone call.
Oh.
Confidence scams are phone calls, scams, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. That kind of stuff. Not yeah, in person? Fuck no. You can't pull shit on me like that in person. But on the phone, you know, it's easier to get away with stuff because your inflections and things like that.
Okay, then yes, I have.
There you go. See,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And even, I mean, email's even easier, you know. But, okay. I feel like you're going to go a direction, but I will double down on whatever you're saying because I am aware and know about this stuff.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, sure. I have not fallen for any scam. I have had people try to scam me. I think we all have. You end up in a bar, one time in your life, somebody's going to try to scam you. One person. It is something that I've noticed while being in certain bars. Maybe I just have that look about me. That's why I'm also very aware.
Right.
But you know the greatest shield is just not having empathy.
Sure.
Once you don't
sure.
have empathy, whatever story they come yes. up with, you're just like, that's, oh my God, that's mm-hmm. terrible.
Yeah.
I hope you're okay with that. And then you move away.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to talk about the scams. I'm not going to go over the origin of it, but I want to go over just the scams, what a scam is, you know, little terminology, and then go over some other stuff, and then get into like the name of some of the scams and just go over them briefly. But a confidence scam is the attempt to defraud a mark after gaining their trust or confidence, hence the name confidence man, which is shortened to con man or con woman. The scam exploits the mark by manipulating emotions and desires. Other names for a scam are con game, confidence game, confidence scheme, ripoff, stratagem, finesse, grift, hustle, bunko with a K or bunko with a C, swindle, flimflam, gaffle, and bamboozle.
I love flimflam.
Yeah. Yes, I do too. Yeah. Other names for victims, marks, suckers, stooges, mugs, rubes, or gulls, short for gullible, from the word. There was an author who set out and did some research and sort of broke a con down to six stages. First, there's the foundation work. Preparations are made in advance of the game. You know, that can include hiring assistants, studying background needed for the role that they're going to portray. The second stage would be the approach, how they approach the victim. The build-up, you know, what is the victim given an opportunity to profit from by participating in the scheme? The payoff or the convincer. The victim receives a small payout as a demonstration of the scheme's purported effectiveness. Then there's the hurrah, a sudden manufactured crisis or change of events that forces the victim to act or make a decision immediately. And that's usually where the con will either succeed or fail. And then the in, a conspirator, maybe someone who is in on the con, but assumes the role of an interested bystander, puts an amount of money into the same scheme as the victim to add an appearance of legitimacy. Those might apply to most cons. There are quite a few scams. There are the get rich quicks, the persuasions, the gold brick, the extortion or false injury, gambling tricks, spurious qualifications or endorsements, online scams, religion-based scams, and other one-offs. I haven't heard this one or heard it called this, and I think I've maybe only heard about it in passing, just through like maybe a television show, but it's called the Jam Auction. And in this, the con man poses as a retail sales promoter, representing a manufacturer, distributor, or set of stores. It requires assistance to manage purchases and money exchanges while the pitch man maintains a high energy. So this is done in like a boardwalk or something like that, you know, maybe in a carnival where they're selling
high traffic. Yeah.
Selling a bunch of, you know, they're selling wares amongst other people selling wares. The trickster entices potential victims by referring to high-end products, but claims to be following rules that they must start with smaller items. Those smaller items are sold for a very small amount, which equates one-to-one. It goes up. The pitchman then makes an emotional appeal, saying, "Raise your hand if you're happy with your purchase." When the hands are raised, he directs his associates to return everybody's money, because they're so happy and they have this confidence that, see, you know, these people were happy, so I'm going to return them their money, trying to get the marks to actually put in more money. Eventually, the pattern, they keep doing this and getting up to higher dollar value items. Eventually, the pattern terminates by the auction ending without reaching the very high value items, and they stop midway through this phase, where the trickster retains all the collected money from that round of purchases. The marks feel vaguely dissatisfied, but they have goods in their possession and the uplifting feeling of having demonstrated their own happiness several times. The marks do not realize that the total value of goods received is significantly less than the price paid in the final round. The auction / refund rounds may be interspersed with sales rounds that are not refunded, keeping marks off balance and hopeful that the next round will refund. The jam auction has its roots in the carnival culture. That's just a little bit of what I want to talk about. What is the Amateur Movie Review Hour? Before we began our podcast, the three of us curated a list of approximately 100 movie genres. We then fed that list to a magical random generator that we use to provide us with the movie genre. The three of us take turns choosing movies to watch that fit into the chosen genre. We then watch that movie and attempt to return bi-weekly to review and discuss that movie. The only movies that we have banned are Marvel and DC movies from the past 15 years. I am not a professional movie reviewer. I just love to watch movies and then review those movies with my friends and you, my fellow screen fiend. Today's movie is titled Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, which is the remake adaptation of Bedtime Story.
Yeah.
The screenplay was done by Dale Launer, Stanley Shapiro, Paul Henning. The writer was Dale Launer, Stanley Shapiro, and Paul Henning. The director was Frank Oz, based on the Bedtime Story by Stanley Shapiro and Paul Henning. I found that fascinating that they were brought back to do this remake.
He does make a cameo.
You'll have to point that out, because I didn't know that.
Frank Oz.
Yeah. Oh, Frank Oz.
The actors are Steve Martin, Michael Caine, Glenn Headley, Anton Rogers, and Barbara Harris. I did not know that was her name, Glenn Headley. Yeah. I knew exactly who she was because I've seen her, the late great Glenn Headley.
Uh-huh.
Seen her in quite a few things, such as Sergeant Bilko. I remember her in there quite fondly.
Oh, she's been around forever, and don't forget she was on Monk. She was the police captain's wife.
I did not watch Monk, but I had seen that in her film or her history.
Mm-hmm.
She was also in Future Man until she had passed, and that
she was
the last
mom,
year.
Right?
Yeah,
she was. I was very shocked when she died. I didn't know she was sick, so I was kind of blindsided by that when she died. That was very, very upsetting. And I can't remember, there was another celebrity who died right around the same time. Oh, I think it was Bill Paxton. Bill Paxton die right around the same time, and they worked together right before they died?
Possibly. That was 2020, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there was...
They were in a movie together right before they both died, where they play a husband and wife, and then they both passed.
Was it? Or was it Fred?
Fred?
Fred Werner?
Fred Rogers?
Fred Werner?
Fred Werner?
Yeah.
I know that it was Bill Paxton.
Okay.
Because I remember seeing them in a movie together and thinking, wow, they died right around the same time, and they're both in this movie.
The release date was December 5th, 1988. The runtime is 110 minutes. Megs, why this movie?
Well, I've always loved this movie. I think these two, the three lead characters just work wonderfully together. I haven't seen the original, so I actually can't say that it's a better one, but everybody loves this movie. I think this is one of those movies that's kind of stood the test of time. I did order the original movie, and I have the DVD now, but it came kind of late for me to watch, so I haven't been able to watch it yet.
Okay.
I'm hoping to watch it this week and maybe let you guys borrow the DVD afterwards so you can check it out.
Okay.
From some of the photos on the DVD, it looks like a lot of the same scenes from the movie.
Yeah, I just did some cursory glance at a synopsis of the original one. It's a very one for one.
Yeah.
Like there's some things changed because, as you mentioned in the last episode, times change.
And I think the strengths of these actors, you know, like Steve Martin, he's kind of a fall down funny guy. You know, he does a lot of pratfalls and stuff. So I think, you know, whereas Marlon Brando and David Niven, They're not really known for a lot. David Niven's clearly going to be the Michael Caine character, but you don't really picture Marlon Brando doing all these, you know, Steve Martin-esque pratfalls. So
acting as Ruprecht?
Yes. No. So that's why I'm really excited to see that eventually, to see how Marlon Brando plays this.
Yes.
I have a feeling I know exactly how David Niven plays it because I've seen a lot of David Niven movies. I think I can honestly say that this... I mean, I love this movie. I can't imagine that I'm going to love the other one more. I think that these three were such a great mixture. They did such a great job. Glenn Headley, she was really funny, and she did a lot of drama in her lifetime. So it's great to see her doing the funny woman. And of course, you know, Michael Caine, I just love that man. He can do no wrong.
Yeah, Michael Caine is great. He's a great actor.
He is.
He's a great actor.
Yeah, he does it all. You know, he's suave, he's handsome, but he's also, you know, that kind of arrogant, jerky, you know, like he's just everything. And then I love Steve Martin. Who doesn't love Steve Martin? He was part of my 80s existence, you know.
He changed comedy and he changed the approach to stand up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
not an approach to stand-up.
Well, I think he reinvented physical comedy again because it was gone for a while. I mean, you had like the '60s version, Jerry Lewis, stuff like that.
Sure,
yeah, but there was Dick Van Dyke falling down every week on your television, exactly, tripping over the ottoman, you know, and it was goofy, and it was funny, but he did it in kind of a more raunchy way, you know, and it made it a little more funny and a little more risque, and it was, you know, I liked it.
Yeah. So I'm going to just make a guess, and you didn't like the newest remake.
The Hustle? You didn't like The Hustle?
I did not. I didn't watch The Hustle. The previews were bad enough. And there's also something that they left that they didn't, at least from the previews. This movie had really beautiful, picturesque locales. And the other one, it's just kind of like, oh, let's have an ultra modern everything's like seems very cold and boring and very basic bitch, you know, everything's so basic, you know, nowadays that, you know, it's like, you know, women can have some taste too. Let's put them in a beautiful exotic locale instead of some like very dry and boring ultra modern, you know.
Yeah,
it's just annoying. Like I wanted to be at Michael Caine's house, you know, that was beautiful.
I want to have a set of stairs that leads right down to my own private fucking beach.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Be awesome sometimes.
Mm-hmm. So no, I have not seen the new one.
Okay.
And I don't think I will.
It was as equally funny to me. Like, I laughed as many times for this one as I laughed in the other one. Like, the jokes were there. Like, they landed it.
I don't know. I'm
not calling
it. I'll have to see it to believe it, because that, I, you know, I have... I don't know. What's her name is kind of funny.
Rebel Wilson.
Rebel
is
Wilson's
funny.
A funny guy.
Like, yeah, she is but funny.
I have what's her name? What's Catwoman or whatever she was?
Yeah, I know why.
She's Anne Hathaway.
Anne Hathaway. Yeah. I find her very white toast.
Okay.
You know, and I have trouble even picturing her. Even if she's the straight man, I would have trouble at least. You know, you, as a straight man, you still have to. It has to bounce off you. You have to. Sure. You have to do a little work there. So I just I'll see it. I'd have maybe I'll watch it and check it out. If you say it was funny, I'll check it out.
It was to me. I also find things. I'm easily entertained. So. For me to say,
I feel like you're backtracking now. Like, just don't watch it.
No, I don't want you to go in there and be like, you not
you
laugh.
You
like,
don't want you me don't, to knock like, on your door at 3 a.m. Like, I just watched
fuck
this movie.
You, Trevor. Fuck you. I don't get any of that time back, you son of a bitch.
I drove all the way here to tell you this.
Josh, you got any thoughts about this movie?
Honestly, like, I was never enamored of it when I watched it, like, ever. Like, it's never really kind of, like, it falls short for me, weirdly enough. I don't know. Just something about it. So, upon rewatching it, I mean, you'll hear my opinion later. So,
oh. We'll get to that. Okay, all right, okay.
But, I mean, like, it was, I was more, like, if you're talking Steve Martin stuff, more like, and this is because I like John Candy more, Planes, Trains, Automobiles.
Okay.
You know what I mean, I like other things he did. Like everything he did, I'm like, there's honestly few and far between. That I'm not a big Steve Martin fan. You know, The Jerk was okay. It's just, I would say the content was good because it kind of thrashed the lines of a lot of things. You know, like he's living with a black family like down in the South, which is hilarious. You know, and he's like, some of those scenes were great. This one, it's just the buffoonery, you know what I mean? That's all it is, you know what I mean? And it's meant to be that way, but I don't know. Neither one of these guys would have been a fucking, like, oh, I'm just taking 80s. Like, doesn't matter, like, you know? Like, sure, Michael Caine is very, like, swarthy, you know? He has that thing about him, but...
Swarthy?
Yeah, I think that's the word, isn't
Suave.
It? I like swarthy more.
Okay.
Is that a word? Did I make
it,
that
it,
up?
It is.
It's kind of a word.
I think it's
swarthy. It's swarthy, and it's not... doesn't mean what you think it does.
You usually call a pirate swarthy.
Yeah.
It's a handsome man, but it's dark complexion, so that doesn't work. So, yeah.
Yeah.
That's but not what they, everyone but, yeah. with dark skin is swarthy, apparently. So just know that.
All right.
In case you didn't
know. It's kind of a bad word to say nowadays. People don't usually like to say it. It's what mothers, how mothers would
test it out later.
Refer
we'll
to
out.
Their women, their daughters bringing home the wrong kind of guy back in the day.
I'm going to just tell 8 out of 10 people that they're swarthy tonight. We'll find out what they think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You never know. Ooh, yeah. It'll be, hopefully it's a very loud building. Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyways, what I'm saying is, yeah, like the debonair, you know, the like it just sure slick back hair, he's got nice suits on and everything like that. But it for me, I didn't buy it. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
what do you mean you didn't buy it.
I didn't buy it.
What do you mean?
I don't think Michael Caine's picking up. That's why he was always hitting on the biddies.
He
that's
had
why.
A story.
Yeah, and he was hitting
like
on the biddies.
It wasn't like they were these young chicks. They were old ladies with money. That's
exactly.
all he wanted. He was
sure. yeah.
He was out to get the old
down
ladies
to
with
it
money.
And he's like, I'll beat you at your own game is what I'll do.
Very good. Very good. Yeah. That was very good.
And then he ends up cheating. That's all he does is cheat.
Yeah, he's bad cop. I mean, he's swindling people.
Yeah,
he is swindling people for the right reasons. It's to
sure.
to keep the art to keep the art alive. Like
to,
he
and the his, wine all to
the
himself.
Wine, the wine, the art, and the beautiful topiaries
but you know what?
And whatnot.
So he purchased a bunch of this stuff, and he said, "I wanted to see some of his art. That would have been amazing." Like he says, a special room with all this like a little art there, and it's like little like terrible clay pots. And you know, like, yeah. Anyways,
stick figure
I don't know. It just
things.
it flows well, but it's just I don't know. It's never. I don't think about it ever. You know what I mean? It doesn't strike me as a movie where I'm like classic or anything like that, or even cult or anything of that nature. It's weird. I don't know. It's for some reason I'm just blah.
I think this was more of a Steve Martin. film than it was a Michael Caine film, although it really revolved around Michael Caine's character.
Yeah, I really saw it as I mean, it was kind of a, I wouldn't call it a duo movie because Glenn Headley really, sure. Once she comes on the screen, she kind of takes over.
Yes, yeah.
But at the end, yeah, when it's like that turn, when it's like, you watch Kevin Spacey, spoilers if you haven't watched fucking Usual Suspects, when then he goes Kaiser Soze, and you're like, oh my God, because that made the entire thing something, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's what made her whole role in this great.
Yeah.
Because when she Kaiser Soze is on Soze,
Yes. Well, it went, so I figured it out about 2/3 of the way through. I was like, yeah, she's the fucking jackal.
Oh.
Yeah.
They do throw a loop in there because they keep calling what's his name the jackal.
Yeah, exactly. That was my first, that was the first drop. Like, ah, he's never even asked him if he refers to himself as the jackal.
Yeah.
I think the first time I ever saw it, I was just really enjoying it. So I wasn't like looking to solve the case.
Sure.
So I've seen it so many times that I really don't remember what I was thinking the first time I saw it because I was young. This was 1988. I was a freshman in high school when this movie came out. So it was probably the first couple of times I saw this. I didn't see it. I didn't see it at the theater. So I didn't see it until like 91, something about, probably a few years later on cable.
Sure.
So, and I probably watched it a few times without paying attention to it. So I was a little older when I fell in love with this movie. I mean, I watched it a lot over the years, but I don't think it was one of those things that I really appreciated until I was a little bit older.
Yeah, it's a trope that misdirect is a trope. Mm-hmm. Well, you guys want
to
get
in? Well, that's the thing. You weren't looking like, sorry to.
No, I'm sorry.
Back in the day, you really weren't looking to solve the movie. You know what I mean? You were just watching it for the enjoyment of it. There were certain, like, Clue, sure.
Yeah,
true. But it's a fucking murder mystery,
I think, though, if you're sitting there paying attention to the movie and really into the movie, sometimes you are kind of like, I think I know what's going on in this movie. Because then you want to feel like you're smarter than everybody you're watching the movie with. Or, but especially if you're a kid, you want to feel like, oh, I'm smarter than my parents watching.
But all those same things have been done over and over and over again to where you're like, okay, yeah, I see that now. You know, the misdirect was there. But now when you watch movies, it's the misdirect and then it's there or it isn't. And that's what fucks you up when you're trying to guess fucking plots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
There's a reason why they still use the misdirect because you can throw it out there and the viewer, reader, whatever doesn't know. Ooh, it could also be the red herring at the same time.
That's true.
So
yeah.
You guys want to get into this spoiler-filled review?
Let's get into it.
All right.
Dirty, rotten scoundrels.
This movie begins with the removal of an expensive-looking necklace, a 3-strand pearl necklace with a diamond clasp from a woman's neck, to be exact. She hands the necklace to a faceless aristocrat voiced by Michael Caine, hoping to help the cause of his people. The aristocrat refuses, but eventually accepts the pearl necklace, but for the children. The camera pans up to reveal a well-lit night on the French Riviera. The opening credits play. We are in a French Riviera casino interior, as the camera tracks right, showing us as much as the camera passes a roulette table and then a card table. The camera stops on Lawrence Jameson, played by Michael Caine, who is dressed in a black suit and has his back turned to the camera.
Oh, those English teeth.
Inspector Andre, played by Anton Rogers, dressed in a pinstripe suit, faces the camera, points out a woman in the casino. A blonde in a blue sequin dress. I can't. Extremely rich.
You got it at the end, you got it, yeah.
Eminently corruptible and a willing infidel. I'm not good.
You gotta think more like Inspector Clouseau.
I didn't practice enough.
You should have practiced
more. I should have.
Yeah. Huh?
Disappointed.
Yep.
You're a rotten scoundrel.
Lawrence turns around and has his eyes locked on his target. We cut to Lawrence as he sits at the same roulette table as the blonde woman, who is played by Barbara Harris.
The late great.
Mm-hmm. The woman bets quite a large amount on the number 21, and Lawrence plays quite a small amount compared to hers on the number 20. Both of them lose the bet. As a blonde woman looks over at Lawrence, he removes his signet ring from his little finger. He leans into his suddenly there Inspector Andre, how much he can get for the ring. Andre exasperatedly states, "No, not the royal ring, your highness." Lawrence shushes him in front of the blonde woman and runs off into the night, embarrassed.
I think he saunters a little bit. Some sauntering going on there.
The blonde woman looks concerned and follows after Lawrence and Andre. Andre finds Lawrence on the patio being a sad boy. The blonde woman asks if Lawrence is actually royalty, and Andre that what he had said was a mistake and she should forget it. However, the blonde woman presses for more information, and Andre reveals that even though he is the police chief and that Lawrence is a prince and he does some reverse psychology on her, you should not go to him. That genius of a man... of destiny. So the woman approaches Lawrence as he forlornly looks up towards the starry night, lost in brilliant thought. The woman approaches Lawrence as one would approach a scared animal. Lawrence asks if she is one of his subjects. She is not. She is Fanny Eubanks of Omaha. Fanny tells him that she wants to help in whatever way she can, but he declines her help. Instead, he says that she might be in danger and that she is beautiful. He looks at the moon as he replies, "It's getting late," and he jumps from the patio into some palm bushes.
So what would that be? Like, is this, like, what would this con be called, though? You know what I mean? Like, it's, he does the same move, appears every time. Like, it's the whole, like, I'm a ruler or something. I mm-hmm. need your help with my people.
Well, it's kind of like what they do now on the interweb, you know, yeah. like it's kind of like that scam that goes over the interweb now where they're like, I'm a prince from
it's a persuasion type of one.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh yeah. It just seems like this is like the live version of the one that we see all the time with the prince, the foreign, you know, the Nigerian prince who's like, I need money for my people.
Sure. Maybe a variation on the Spanish prisoner, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Andre appears asking if Lawrence is gone. Fanny still wants to help, even though she knows that he's been a widower for 5 years. We cut to Fanny and Lawrence in bed as Fanny holds a diamond encrusted brooch over to Lawrence in order to help his freedom fighters. Lawrence and Andre sit in an office as Lawrence divvies up some French money, francs. A portion of the money goes to Arthur, who is played by Palpatine Ian McDiarmid.
He's got the Darth Butler there.
Yep. A portion goes to Andre as well. Lawrence heads to Zurich, where he deposits his money. And from the bank, he heads to a train to take back to the French Riviera. And he does so, taking a seat in the dining car. Now enter Freddie Benson, played by Steve Martin. Freddie, who is an American, spots a woman sitting alone at a table and joins her. He wants to eat, but the prices are too high, so he tells the waiter that he'll just have water. The woman asks why the change of mind. He then begins to his spiel about his grandmother, about how he's saving up so that way he can help his grandmother out with some surgery.
His con was so terrible.
It was only for fucking lunch.
It doesn't matter though. Like, I was just like, that's just like, it was,
it's supposed to be terrible. That's why he's learning. He goes to learn from Michael Caine.
But then spoiler, but he does the same thing later. Give me money for grandma.
Well, that's what he knows. Like, mm-hmm. that's the heartstring that he can pull at. That's the one that he's determined to use. Like, I believe that every con man has that one underlying emotional get. No, I'm gonna take that back. They're cold readers. Good ones are cold readers, yeah. and they'll use whatever they want to get whatever they want.
Right. Well, yeah.
For this movie, apparently, they believe that grandmothers get the best pull instead of grandfathers.
Well, dudes can't really use grandfather. A girl could be like, oh, my sweet grandfather is down on his farm.
Well, it's exact. Yes, yeah. yes.
But a dude has to be mother or it has to be grandmother. You can't, dudes don't have that kind of, that their relationship with their fathers is usually different, so they wouldn't use that.
I think you could if you find the right male mark.
That's true.
Like, if you find the right male mark, you could do that with just being a guy, mm-hmm. not, you don't have to be a female. Oh, yeah. Like,
Oh, you could use like my grandfather was a war veteran, yes, and he's lost, you know, he lost his legs back in the day, and but he still took care of the family, and you know, you could go that way, but it's always that kind of the sweet little grandmother. That's always been that kind of my sweet little mother, my sweet little grandmother. Usually,
I would combine that with sex trafficking. So she was taken to a sex traffic farm for sexual needs. Shut up. And that's
women,
what she does now.
Women see it as a man taking care of his mother, that he would take care of her in that way. Yeah. You know, like he has a soft spot for the women in his life. He takes care of the women in his life. So therefore I could be the woman in his life.
Yeah. It's appealing to the emotional.
Mm-hmm.
So are they also prostitutes because they're having sex with these women?
In a way.
Sex. Yeah.
They're gigolos.
Yeah.
Gigolo sex workers.
Yeah.
Yes.
The woman takes pity and buys Freddy a meal. Freddy takes advantage of the opportunity, you know, doing as anybody would by ordering an extravagant amount of food. All the while, Lawrence watches Freddy work his craft. Cut to Lawrence in a cabin reading a newspaper. Freddy walks by and chooses to join Lawrence in his cabin. He seems to have forgotten that he had a first-class ticket. Lawrence digs into Freddy's grandmother's story. Freddy gives up his trick. Lawrence implies that that's a cheap trick. Freddy has a snide remark for him. The two exchange names, and Freddy tries to read Lawrence. He assumes that he's a married man when Lawrence is not a married man. So Lawrence is like, all right, cool. This dude's 100% amateur. Freddy goes on to boast about how he makes money from women. Lawrence gives Freddy side eye. Freddy then tells Lawrence that they could have done some real good work in this town in the Riviera called Beaumont-sur-Mer. Lawrence perks up at the name. He attempts to throw Freddy off by directing him to another town. Unfortunately, Freddy doesn't bite. The train has arrived to Beaumont-sur-Mer. Just as Lawrence thought that Freddy was going to ruin his good thing, a young woman boards the train, distracting Freddy from his original idea. Lawrence, now on the train platform, watches as a potential problem disappears. Andre appears, and Lawrence tells Andre that Marion was the perfect decoy for a small-time player. Lawrence, now back in his habitat, lunches with Andre. They briefly discuss another con artist called the Jackal. Instead, Andre wants to discuss the next target, Kristen Knudsen, widow of the great Danish match king, Otto Knudsen. I think it was Otto.
The Knudsen.
Krista, driving a white Ferrari, pulls up to the Excelsior Hotel with none other than Freddie Benson in the passenger seat. Lawrence asks Andre to do something for him. Andre replies the usual. Cut to Freddie taking Krista's white Ferrari out for a ride in Beaumont. Andre follows Freddie in a spending spree montage. I like the posing with the girl with all his money on the beach. It's like, what the fuck are you?
That's why he's petty.
That's no different than some kid flashing $1,000 and 100 bills on his Snapchat.
Or or an NBA player with like 5 guns.
Or that.
Like, hey, look at all my bang bang.
At the end of the montage, it is revealed that Krista was also with Andre. She is furious about what she is seeing, and when she is prompted to sign a complaint, she gladly agrees. Cut to the interior of a French jail where Freddy is panicking about his situation. Freddy tries to remember Lawrence's full name but fails. Andre makes the guess of Lawrence Jameson. Now Lawrence has arrived to the jail where Freddy begs for help. Lawrence and Andre are gonna run a con on Freddy. The con works. Andre and Lawrence escort Freddy to a plane to fly him home. However, as luck would have it, on the way home, Freddy is approached by Fanny Eubanks as she saw him shake hands with Lawrence on the tarmac. Freddy realizes he was conned. Back in the Riviera, Lawrence eats breakfast when Freddy arrives unexpectedly. Lawrence tries to buy off Freddy, but Freddy wants what Larry has. I'm going to start calling him Larry now.
Okay.
Larry Fred?
Yep. Freddy proposes that Larry teach him about the art, and Larry agrees. Freddy will run the cons while Larry takes a percentage. We get a tutelage montage. This was a pretty funny montage.
I love montages.
It was the 80s, so you had a film, you had to do montage.
That's right.
It's all.
There's nothing like a good montage. Love them.
At the end, Larry declares Freddy ready to con in Beaumont. We cut to Larry and Freddy running one particular con on another unsuspecting woman. This one involves Freddy playing Ruprecht, Larry's different brother. After the cons have been completed, Larry divvies up the money. He does this. There's three scenes where they play this, and it's all to break up with these women.
Right.
Like that. Lawrence has backed himself into a corner by having proposed marriage to three separate women. Steve Martin has come in to play Ruprecht, his different brother, and throw the women off so much that they decide to call off the marriage.
And pay him to do it.
And yes, giving Larry exactly what he wants, which is not having to break up his cons and making the money and not having to pay Freddie for any of it.
Yeah, that's what they did in, what was it, the Mother show? This Is How I Met Your Mother?
Oh, really?
At one point, what's her name? Hannigan, Allison Hannigan, moves in with Barney, who is
Neil Patrick Harris.
And she comes home every morning after he has a girl.
Oh, that's right.
And they think she's the wife. And then they dip out. So it's like that's his like exit strategy on it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, I was caught again. That's funny though.
Yeah.
Hey.
It is funny. Yeah.
Like get out. You can't just say get out, huh?
Yeah.
You need to be like, hey, that's my wife, Mary.
Well, these women don't. These women find out that there's this special needs brother who they don't want to have to live with, because that's when he tells them, not only is my brother a little special, but he's going to live with us.
Yeah.
And he's going to be a part of our lives on a daily. He's not going to live in a special house. He's going to live in our house with us. And these women are like, no, that's not going to happen.
And they should have done like one where it was like she was into it and she ended up like banging Steve Martin's character though. And you're like, oh, that was a waste of time.
That would be a little weird.
Yeah. But that would work too, because then it's like, okay, now you need to pay me for banging my special brother.
Sure. Sure. You know? Yeah. Or I'm going to tell your father, you know, you've violated the sanctity of our engagement.
Yeah.
So now that Freddie knows that he's not getting paid for any of his work, he's done with it. Freddie tells Larry that he's leaving Beaumont. He's going to go work his trade somewhere else, or so Larry believed. Freddie had not changed his mind and decided to stay put and ply his trade. Larry threatens Freddie, so Freddie retaliates by bringing up the name Fanny of Omaha. Larry thinks Freddie is a moron, and Freddie thinks Larry is scared of him. Freddie thinks Larry's scared of competition. Like, can't hang with me. So in order to determine who the better con man is, they make a bet. Whomever can con $50,000 from the same woman first wins. The winner will stay in Beaumont, and the loser will leave Beaumont. Now enter Janet Colgate, who is played by Glenn Headley, who is the soap queen of USA. I like how they turned that around at the end. But we'll find out that doesn't matter anyway. Larry has arrived at his usual hunting grounds and starts to apply his craft using the same con as he did for Fanny. They're in the casino, and they're at the roulette table again. After some time, Freddie arrives to the casino as a disabled Navy man, and he sits right between Janet and Larry. And Larry's been winning. He hasn't been able to do his normal con by trying to pawn it or use his signet ring as a marker.
Losing the ring, yeah.
And he ends up winning a shit ton of money, too.
Yeah. You let it ride and you hit the exact number that many times, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, like you go cash out that and be like, aha.
It was probably 20. He made half the money he would have made in that bet. Yeah.
Yes. So Freddie makes a bet and loses, and he wheels himself off. Jen, feeling something, follows after.
Oh, that's, he did the same thing, but he did it with the metal.
He tried
to turn his metal. And apparently.
That was great. He's like, would you ask the guy if they'll take this? And the guy off screen is like, yeah, no, that's no good.
Because those are made with just regular potted metal. It's not anything precious at all.
Yeah, they're what, coated or whatever? Mm-hmm. They're
probably, plated, gold-plated at the most, but it's just regular metal, it's not worth it. Well, I mean, it's worth something because you did something, but.
There are some, not all of those. There are specific ones that
apparently all those medals are not. From my knowledge, they're supposed to, because they're supposed to mean something on a intrinsic value for you, not for actually being worth money or anything like that.
Sure, sure. Yeah. There, I will say, depending, much like watches or any other thing, the historic value, the origin of wherever it came influences that. But yes, those carry more of a...
Well, it's like Nazi memorabilia, you know what I mean? Like, if it wasn't Nazi memorabilia, would it be worth anything? If it was like, oh, this was Russian memorabilia from the 1940s, like, okay, I'll give you a little bit.
A little.
But there's like that weird club that loves all that stuff. And that pops up in movies a lot. I think it's hilarious. Because they always like... Well, of course... Well, could you demonize somebody for disliking some art, you know?
Well,
no, there's collection, and then there's obsession and imitation.
Yeah.
There are collectors. Yeah. Like, you can collect stuff. It's so okay.
That was in that the gentleman, the what thing I watched. So one of the things they had was one of the guys, like one of the lords, ended up being like he was a collector.
Yeah.
And he had like these like a bunch of paintings. He said, these are all... He even started veering into like a German accent when he was doing it. He's like, these are all drawn by the Führer. And then his coup de grace, his big piece was a jar with this thing in it. And it was like, did you know that Hitler lost one of his balls? And it was like Hitler's ball, supposedly. And then a dog eats it. Anyways, watch that. Very cool. Watch it. It's good.
Very cool.
That would be obsession.
No. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. If you're.
Yeah.
Yes, I would agree with you. If you're collecting body parts.
Well, yeah, even if that's you're obsession. If you're, it is that kind of thing when there's somebody so abhorrent as Adolf Hitler, sure. And you are a collector of his artwork and all this. I mean, it kind of gets to that point. Like, why? You know, other than maybe there. I guess there could be that you want to own his stuff because you want to. You want to own him.
It's
like
dark
history. It's obsessive to devout.
It is. Yeah. I think there are some people who maybe are really into him and they do it for that reason. And then there are also the people who have they want to possess his things in order to put him down. Like I own you now, you know? Yes. So there are those different kinds of people.
If I ever did, if I ever owned any piece of stuff like that, any like memorabilia with that, I'd be such a dick. And I'd be like, read this book. What do you think about that? And I'd be like, look at the inscription. Like, have him look through it. Like, get a good, like, oh, that's kind of cool. I don't know. I was like, look in the front of the jacket. You got a little Adolf signature there, something like that. And you just read from the book the Führer did. And then I have a little remote, and it goes, dun, 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 dun. Fucking red and white. No, I'm just kidding. I don't do I'm Jewish. I don't do that. I'm fucking around. I just like to fuck with people, though.
It fascinates me. Like I wouldn't own anything.
It's,
like
it's all history.
I wouldn't. Yeah. Like if you did that to me, I'd be like, all right, cool. Hitler's still a piece of shit, and I still love America. Oh, did that?
Now you get that America. Yeah. I love how you threw that in. Yeah, thank you.
Larry's perplexed by the whole situation that's happening with Janet following after Freddie. Freddie and Janet are now sitting outside, talking at a small cafe table. Freddie uses his grandmother a bit to lure her in. Finally, he goes in for the big ask. He wants to seek treatment from famed psychiatrist Emil Schaffhausen for the trauma that stemmed from seeing his fiance have an affair with Danny Terrio, the host of Dance USA. I have no idea what the hell Dance USA is was.
Yeah, it was.
That is a... pop culture name that goes beyond me.
Dance USA? Was it just made up?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Or was it like a TV show like Solid Gold? You know, like one of those...
I don't know.
American Bandstand.
It's actually the same year, 1986 to 1992. It was called Dance Party USA, though. They probably
maybe that's why they just the called term. It... They Yes. Well, that was a piece of pop history or
that was
pop
a Mexican
culture.
Show, I think.
I have no idea.
Like, I think that was in Mexico.
Well.
Like you know, like a Telemundo type show.
Sure. But when Freddie sees a couple dancing, he has a breakdown. During this, Andre has been eavesdropping during the conversation. We cut to Janet's room. where Janet has just finished writing a letter of recommendation to Dr. Schaffhausen. Janet also promises to pay for Freddie's treatment. When Janet goes to mail the letter, a bellhop is calling out for Dr. Schaffhausen. Janet meets Dr. Emil Schaffhausen, who turns out to be Larry, whom she was playing roulette next to earlier that evening. Larry convinces Janet not to give Freddie any money. Instead, she will pay him the $50,000 instead of giving the money to Freddie. Janet returns to her room with Dr. Emil, spoiling Freddie's con. Larry does foot play with Freddie and then some leg stuff as he becomes aggressive. He
switches the shit out of him, yeah. I like the part when he like gets all the way across the room. Like it gave that much more force to it.
Yeah.
Like, because when he's, that's a full saunter.
Yeah.
He did a half saunter before. That was full saunter. Sauntered 35 feet across the room, and then there was a leap.
There was a little leap.
Swap.
Yeah.
That was, yeah, that's extreme pain.
All I was reminded of
was
Freddie got fingered. Yeah. That's all that I was reminded of. And then I wonder.
Hit me harder.
Yeah, wonder if that may have inspired Tom Green to do that scene or whomever wrote it, because that's really specific. I found it funny though. It was one of the parts where I was actually really laughing. I was like, that is fucking hilarious. Unable to get Freddie to squeal, the con stays alive. Larry has also blown his cover when Mrs. Reed, played by Dana Ivey, makes an appearance, calling him Prince. And for those of you who do not recall, she was in the Addams Family and Addams Family Value.
Almost all the women were from, you know, like that Megan Fay, who played one of the Ruprecht women, she was from Malcolm in the Middle. And the other one, the other Ruprecht woman, she was from American Horror Story. She's in all those American Horror Story movies.
Oh, nice.
Or shows. She was the maid with the one eye in the first season.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. She works a lot now. But back then, I don't know. Like, I notice her more now when I look back at old stuff. I'm like, oh, that's that chick from American Horror Story.
Yeah.
But that's when she really popped in that, you know, with the scary eye and everything.
Oh yeah, of course.
I didn't watch that one. I watched Nigerian Horror Stories.
Ooh,
it's just basic everyday life there.
Right. Okay. Is that why those princes are always writing to us?
Yeah.
You guys are lucky. I don't get no princes writing to me.
I don't either.
No.
Well, they don't do it anymore. It's because no one answers it.
They still do. Apparently,
I get the calls. I get the, your Amazon account is going to be charged $923.74. for the purchase of an iPhone 15.
Mm-hmm. Like,
sure it did. I'll press one.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you see a few years ago that Nigerian story where they contacted this guy who was he was a retired judge. And they were just kind of like, oh, you're a retired judge. That must be very important. You should send us some money. Otherwise, we're going to come after your wife, that kind of thing. And it's like, not only was he a retired judge, but he was also the retired head of not only the CIA, but the FBI. And he's the only person to ever have held both director positions. So he tracked down this guy.
Sure.
You know, like he still knew people.
Sure.
He's an elderly man. He was 80-something years old, but he made some phone calls and they tracked the guy down, you know? So that was one of those big ones where they, you know, they were like, you don't threaten the former director of the CIA. You know, like that's kind of foolish. But the only thing that the guy that showed up when they looked, I guess, was that he was a retired judge, and they just probably figured he's got some money.
Yeah,
I guess they don't realize that even judges around here have some connections.
Meg, you give them a lot. You give the scammers a lot of credit, thinking they'll do research on their victims.
Well, they did enough that they knew he was a retired judge. Which
yeah,
is
that's
weird.
That
yeah.
as much as they'll do.
Yeah, that was kind of interesting. It's like you didn't look too far.
It probably, I would hazard a guess that they got information from companies just selling information.
Yeah.
Or they just hacked those companies or servers or whatever and got that information.
Yeah.
At Larry's mansion, Larry tries to win the bet by forcing Freddie to climb a set of stairs in order to stop Janet from giving Larry the money. Larry locks Freddie out of the music room as Janet and Larry dance. The next morning, Larry and Janet sit for breakfast. When Arthur arrives with a letter from the missing Freddie, who has threatened suicide, he is soon found wheeling himself around the pool. Arthur returns to inform Larry that a satellite guy has arrived. Freddie, who has now wheeled himself to some steep stairs leading down to the ocean side, looks back at Janet. Janet, now alone, is the only person who can help Freddy if he goes down the steps. Freddy goes down the steps.
Now, this part made me laugh. When he's just
I'm doing, whoa.
Yeah, he's pushing just it, yelling, yeah.
When he gets to the beach, he continues the ruse of suicide when Janet reaches the beach as well. Freddy convinces Janet not to go and fetch Larry. Instead, the two stay down on the beach as Freddy flirts with Janet. Janet leans in to kiss Freddy, just when Larry interrupts.
See, they should have done like that, like a paraplegic version of, what was that movie where they're laying down and then the waves are like crashing over them?
Oh,
and
they're making From Here to Eternity.
From Here to Eternity. They should have just made a mockery of that. That'd have been great.
Cut to another montage of him. Larry.
No, I was going to say him on top. Just dead weight.
Can you do something? I can't. I have no legs or arms.
They never said if his penis worked or not, but I assume it worked. He just couldn't walk or dance. Could he do the dance of dances, though?
He wasn't really a paraplegic.
I know, but in the character of what he was playing.
They never really gave us the medical information about his penis that I so wanted to know.
I did. I wanted to know if he can still, maintain an erection.
Okay.
Cut to another montage of Larry and Janet doing able body activities while Freddy plays the part in his con. They do some tennis, they do some horseback riding, and they do some dancing.
Were his legs the only things that were stiff,
Oh, good lord.
While at the club dancing, Larry is trying to help Freddy and unknowingly pisses off... Are they English or Australian? No, they're English. They're English. Pisses off some English sailors. After Freddy and the English sailors see Larry kiss Janet, they offer to put Larry on a transport plane for Honduras. Freddy likes their plan. Larry learns that Janet is not an heiress, but just a contest winner. She won the name or the contest of Soap Queen of America just because she used their detergent. Larry is moved by the fact that Janet would give everything to help Freddy, even though she doesn't know him all that well. Larry tells Freddy that the bet is off, but Freddy, not giving up, concocts a new bet. Janet's affection. Whoever can bet her first wins. Larry pulls up to his villa gate, but it is blocked by a van full of English sailors that abduct Larry. Freddy returns to Janet's hotel to profess his love for Janet. Janet professes her love as well. She urges him to walk to her. Freddy rises unsteadily and exclaims that he is standing, and he takes some very gingerly steps towards Janet and gives her a hug. Freddy wants to try walking more, so he walks to Janet as she waits for him by her hotel bed. Once reunited, Larry reveals his presence from the corner of the room. Janet fully buys that Freddy has been cured of his ailment. To ensure that Freddy won't be a problem, Larry, by leaving him with the English sailors that had abducted him earlier that night, still portraying as Dr. Emil Schaffhausen, Larry escorts Janet to the airport. When Larry returns to collect Freddy, he points out Janet's plane. He has lost. Freddy rushes back to Janet's room to confirm what Larry told him. He was right. She was gone. But not really, because Janet returned, and she's in love with Freddy. Cut to Larry in his pool when Andre calls. He informs Larry that Janet did not leave on her plane, but instead went back to the hotel where she and Freddy have shacked up with the curtains closed.
Back to the hotel. You know that song?
No.
Suck.
Larry waits to deal with Freddy, the jackal. Larry is surprised when Janet arrives, and not Freddy. She tells Larry that Freddy left her alone and penniless after their lovemaking. Larry covers her losses and the flight back to Cleveland. As the plane is taking off, Andre arrives with Freddy, who's dressed in a white bathrobe. Freddy explains that Janet left him in the hotel with nothing more than this bathrobe. Larry wonders about the $50,000 that Freddy stole. Freddy shouts that he didn't steal the $50,000, and upon looking in the little purse handbag that he has, they find that there's
satchel. It's a full satchel right there.
And upon looking in the satchel, they find not money, instead Freddy's clothes and a note from Janet, the jackal. Larry and Freddy talk about their futures back at Larry's villa. But before they can say their adieus, Janet has arrived in disguise and with a New York accent, and she has a new business proposition for the both of them. Roll credits.
The Kaiser Soze.
Yep.
Yep.
Beautiful.
I did Michael Caine's Australian accent was pretty good.
Yeah.
I think he's done that before in something.
Probably. Like he's a great actor.
Like, yeah.
I mean, when you say the most quoted Australian line of all time about shrimp on the fucking Barbie.
Good day, mate.
Well, that was a fun ending. I thought that was a really, really fun ending.
Like the ending was great. Like I really enjoyed the ending. I was like, all right, that's pretty good.
I almost wanted a sequel with the three of them going about doing that, but that I don't think they could. I don't know if they could have done it.
You could have, but you would have to be very elaborate with it. You would have, it would almost be like an early Ocean's 11. You know what I mean? Like you're doing this.
Yeah, you'd have
huge
to
huge con.
Yeah. You'd have to go all in. It would be an expensive shoot because you have to do it on location. Yeah. And I would like to have seen something like that.
Well, you said what she said. She made $3 million a year. That was the number she quoted on how much she cons out of people.
Uh-huh.
The guy she had with the Greek, whatever he was, I can't remember.
Yeah, it's her Greek husband.
He was worth like $15 million or something like that. Yeah. So based on that and that, after that, you have to go like 30 to 50.
Sure,
you know what I mean.
And
because everything needs to be exponentially more.
Well, I mean, back then that was a lot.
Yeah. Well, no doubt.
We're,
we're going
by those times, and well, I'm talking about
it's you could roughly double it.
Just the they probably. I don't know how much they. I mean, I can look.
I'm
it
talking
up,
the Sheik, Cannonball Run, that kind of money.
I'm not talking about the money that they're getting. I'm talking about the amount of money that it would cost to make these movies on location.
Oh, yeah. Well, if you're, it's going to be.
Because they have to get.
Then it was cheaper.
Yeah.
Then
it was a lot cheaper.
Now it's going to be a lot more expensive unless the host country or wherever you're filming is like, we'll give you a tax break because we know how much money you're going to be spending.
And this would have been back then. It would have been back when they were all still rather young and Glenn Headley was still alive. But
sure, yeah.
I would like to have seen those, or at least one. But I would like that they did maybe a trilogy. Kind of running around and kind of, I mean, Ocean's 11 did it. The Ocean's movies, except for 12, which was just awful, but 13 was good.
Yes. They,
much better.
Mm-hmm.
Those were a big ensemble.
Mm-hmm.
They knew the studio knew what they were risking and they knew how much they were going to get back because of who was in those movies.
And this is a good ensemble and I think they could have, it would be on a smaller scale.
But also it would have built too. This is something that could have built into something more. I do, like I said, I do think this was kind of a weak movie in my opinion, but I think there was potential there for more. Based on the end scene alone, that kind of like took you into a whole different like avenue of what you're gonna do. Like the options were open to like the sky was the limit of what you could have done.
Sure,
and they could have brought in big celebrities to
Burt Reynolds.
Ooh, that Burt Reynolds. That would have been cool.
That would be
you talking mid 80s. Mm-hmm. He was more like huge.
Yeah, they could have done some stuff with it. It would be fun.
And even. All those individuals that were with Janet and her Greek husband, I think those were also potential investors as well. Like it wasn't just
those
her
were all
husband.
Marks.
Like so there was upwards of probably, you know, $100 million worth of marks right there. Like it would have been cool. But it wasn't going to happen and it'll never happen.
No.
I believe that those writers and those directors don't believe in that.
Yeah.
Like doing sequels. Like or like they probably this is about as close as that they were willing to get. It's like, no, we tell our story in one turn in one go.
Yeah.
Like
not necessarily.
The two-parter and the trilogy were few and far between. Those are new. Those are now commonplace for us right now in movies.
Back then it was more it's usually a sequel is something that the company, the motion picture company says we want a sequel out of this.
Yes.
It doesn't have anything to do with the writers or the director and usually they don't even bring the same people back.
But they bring the actors back.
Yeah, they have to.
Yeah.
Otherwise it's not really a sequel.
No.
I mean it can be, but it's not and people don't want to go see it. I mean, they've done it. They did the, look at the Son of the Mask. That didn't have any of the original.
Well, no, you're
That's just trying to bank on the name and the, the storyline.
Fucking Jamie Kennedy.
Oh, I forgot about that one.
I don't know. But yeah, you're right. Yeah, if you replace a beloved, especially if a character from one, the first one doesn't appear in the second one, and you try to replace that character, yeah, it's not.
People
go
don't
too
really
well.
Care about that. But usually the studio will say, "Hey, we made a lot of money on this, or we like this. We're gonna make a sequel." They don't even care whether the writers or the director want to do it. They're not. They don't even necessarily bring them back. They just want.
Sure. They give them the option, but if it's not, it's still going to happen most time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
then this movie probably was just one of those little movies, and they didn't think that much of it. And my whole thing is that I thought that Glenn Headley was finally getting to do, like, she was fun in the movie, she was great, but she was really getting to show some chops at the very end, and then it was over, you know. And I wanted more of that.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen more of that as well.
Yeah.
Well, I think Steve's career was on the fucking going up. At this point,
like,
you know, he started like what the Man with Two Brains, Roxanne. No, this is before that. Man with Two Brains was before this.
That was like what? 87?
Anyways, this is all part of his like going upwards
with the great Rick Rossovich, by the way.
Ooh. Yeah, sure.
The great most likable man in Hollywood, most likable Rick Rossovich.
Yeah, but anyways, his career was on the up. I'd say Kane's was. Probably plateauing at that point, to a point.
Michael Caine is Michael Caine.
It's like, Michael Caine.
I'm saying
just
was
go
plateauing.
To England and back. Well,
like,
he
started doing those Michael weird Caine. Movies late 90s where he started getting that, like, the Academy Award nods again or stuff like that, where he started playing
well,
that
Michael
certain
Caine was, House he rules. Was, he was transitioning and from his younger years into his older years by exactly. now.
Yes,
he was. He was a younger leading man, and he was transitioning into the older.
And he didn't want to play dad roles either. It felt like he didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
So and he ended up playing. Father of all the children when Cider House rules.
And father of Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, he's pretty much he's butler. He did play the fatherly role. He just played a different kind of fatherly role.
True. Yeah. Yes.
But not a direct exactly, yeah. But that's what I'm saying. Like career paths, like it would have been good. It would have worked out well for Caine, I bet. If he would have done that, because he could have transitioned into whatever he wanted, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about her career. I honestly don't know shit about her career at all. So
television and like small stuff. That did a couple more movies.
She did a lot of
art
house
films. Was she on Moonlighting or anything like that?
No, she did art house films. She was in Paper House.
She was in Sergeant Bilko's, another Steve Martin movie.
It was like what 96?
Yeah, mid-90s, mm-hmm. Yeah.
But career wise, I mean this was a. You know, plateau. Hers was going up. His was going up. So I don't know. It would have been good if they did it, but it didn't happen.
Definitely. As a film actor, this is the trajectory up towards it. Mm-hmm. Like yes, but in comedy, he was already killing it. And he was still well known. So it was just
this was before Parenthood, and that's when he was getting into his more mature roles.
That was
drama.
Comedy drama where he wasn't doing as much, you know, he had Father of the Bride.
Yes.
Yeah. He had all that stuff coming on. So it was like he was kind of moving into the bigger budgeted picture.
Well, that was
Less about pratfalls and more about
mid-90s he started transitioning into that father figure. Like he did that move, but there was like a little spurt of where he could have done a little more, you know, been like not a sex symbol, but you know, something of that nature. Like,
well, it's hilarious because he was a gray haired 30 something year old man, and he didn't start playing a father until he was probably in his 40s and he was playing.
He was a sex symbol through the 70s and the 80s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So, Megs, you obviously love this movie. Like, I feel like you go and talk about it.
I'm going to give this 5 cork forks.
All right. 5. Nice.
Cork forks in the eye.
Corks, forks.
Cock fox.
Josh, what you got for final reactions?
Final reaction on this film. I don't know. It's okay. Like I said, I was never a fan from the beginning. Like, it was never, like, one of my favorites. It's still good. I'll give it 3 pearl necklaces. 3 big pearl necklaces.
All right.
Just hanging off the neck.
I'm okay. Very cool. What did you guys notice that Fanny, like, I think there was an exchange. Because the necklace that was taken off of the neck in the opening scene, or the cold open, I guess. Cold open-ish. Yeah, it'd be a cold open. Was on Fanny's neck when she was on the airplane talking with Freddie. So I think there was like a, in my head canon, that there was probably an exchange. He's like, I'll take this, but you can have this because I don't want you to be without something nice or something like that.
It could have been a fake too.
The diamonds might not be real. Yeah. They might be cuban zirconia.
Did they ever show him like putting it on or anything like that?
No. It was just something that I noticed. Oh. It was probably just a reuse of.
And there was supposedly like a cutscene of them like in America too.
The prop, or it was filmed out of sequence.
Sure.
Which was probably what it was.
Now Frank Oz wanted a different ending. Person, he didn't want Hedley coming back. He wanted them going to America to kind of chase her down.
That would have been cool.
It was supposed to be them
in like New York, and like he was really like adamant about it, but they're just like, nah, we're just gonna do this. Like, this is what our idea.
Miss PU was wrong on that one. Well, I like the way they did it.
Yeah, I enjoyed this movie. I thought it was cool.
One of the selling points for Michael Caine doing this movie was also that the villa that they were at was his great friend Sir Roger Moore lived right next door.
He likes to be around his friends. He's always been a great friend to his mates, especially Sean Connery. Remember when Sean Connery was ailing? He did a lot of he usually handled that stuff. If the press was asking about Sean, like what's up with Sean Connery, he'd be like, "He's fine, leave him alone." Yeah. You know, like he usually handled that press, which was interesting. You know, that he would just jump in there and just, you know, always stick up for his buddy, his ailing buddy.
And I just saw this in The Hustle. There's only one scene that's in Monster Mare, and it's the airport. They got one scene at the airport, and somebody's getting on a plane, and there's two nuns, just like in the other scene. There's two nuns they copied that scene for scene on that one. And that's probably the dude, whoever, like, because it's the same story, just with chicks and dudes reversed.
Yes, yeah.
You know, just gender bending.
Yeah.
Kind of stuff, but,
yeah.
What about you? What do you got? What do you think?
I'm giving it two wheelchairs.
Switch.
I'd also give The Hustle two fucking wheelchairs, too.
Wow.
I wouldn't. Yeah, I'll give that two wheelchairs, but not this. Yeah. This is a three for me because it's the people in it. You know what I mean?
Yes. And that's why I'm giving it two.
Yeah.
The story, it's nothing new. I don't think it was new when they wrote it.
It's 40 years old.
It wasn't because this is a remake.
Yeah.
35 years old.
Even when it was done. When it was done in the 40s, sure, it was just that was the first time that was put into film, but it wasn't a new story.
Story
has been told over countless stories. Of course,
most stories that we watch are nothing new. They're just told in different ways.
I think maybe
just like Dune is like Jesus and stuff, right?
Dune is not like Jesus.
It's exactly like it. The worm is the part of the Trinity.
This isn't the podcast for that. I can't begin to go into that.
So we don't have time for this today.
I'll watch it if somebody else wants to watch it. Steve Martin, I'm Steve Martin. Like, yeah, he's good. He's here. He's good there.
Michael, I think Caine's Steve Martin's good, like, only as good as who's ever in the movie with him. Because he needs someone to play off of.
Yeah, yeah.
This is one of those movies that if it's on the television, which sucks kind of now that we don't have really television, we kind of choose what we're going to watch.
Yeah.
But if this was one of those movies that forever, when I turned on the TV, if it happened to be on, I watched it.
Yeah, I won't. If I was in the same position as that, yes, I would leave it on. And I looked up and be like, this is the best thing that's on out of all the crap that's on. I'm going to leave it on. Yeah. I agree with you on that. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Let's play video games instead.
Yeah, well, you know, there's that too. So brings us to our next segment, which is the next movie. Josh, would you like to tell us what movie is next?
I believe what I have is going to be Invaders from Mars.
Invaders from Mars.
So this is playing on Tubi. So from the internets, you can watch this on Tubi. It looked like it was no advertisements or anything like that. So that's cool.
There we go.
But this brings me back to, like, I was talking to Megan about this, that it's a Sunday night movie,
Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, like, yeah, just those.
That's
like
when I would watch this,
like
Saturday
regular TV. Mm-hmm. It was on, and just this is a remake of a 1940s movie, I believe, something like that.
Was it that old?
Let's see. Hold on. 53.
Okay.
So 1953 was the original. And I watched a trailer on it just to kind of do a comparison. The new one, the practical effects are better. It's like there's a couple of things I like. And it just kind of sticks in my mind. Especially there's a scene where it's like, you know, it's just that I watched it when I was a kid. I was 6-7 years old. And it's just this kid that hates his fucking teacher, you know, and she ends up being an alien. It's that classic, like, I'm a kid and fuck you, teacher, you're an alien. Yeah. Ends up being an alien, you know.
My teacher was an alien.
I loved that movie? Because
that's a book series.
Oh, see?
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Yeah.
I like this movie because considering it was one of the newer movies that played on a Saturday afternoon, because you were usually kind of stuck with like 1970s crappy movies,
like Laser Blaster,
and you were like, "Oh my god, this movie is actually made in the 80s, and it's on a Saturday afternoon." So it was probably one of the newer movies, and the movie was pretty good in the beginning when you had Timothy Bottoms and what's her name, the Saturday Night Live gal, and it's not really until like the goddamn kid and his Karen Black, his mother, take over, and it's just like,
he's better than the kid from Time Bandits.
No, he's not. Wait until you listen for his weird
speech. Please wait for me.
No, listen to this kid. This kid's weird way of speaking is incredibly annoying. I don't like it.
I think he's a gem. He's a gem.
Is he a gem?
He is.
He got the job because his father's a producer and his mother's the star of the movie.
Yeah, well, it was the 1980s.
Yeah, he's Karen Black's kid. And he's a terrible kid. Just wait. Just mark my words.
I hope there's an autobiography I can read between then and now, and I'm going to prove you wrong about everything you fucking said. This kid was he was the golden goose, and no one even wanted to attach those eggs.
He was supposed to be the Dalai Lama, but, you know, he gave it up.
He was the original Bud Bundy. He got fired because he was terrible. He did they did the pilot episode, and they had two different kids.
He probably got too tall, and they're like, no, we need a shorter. Here's a Faustino for you. 4'3" Faustino.
No. Yeah. I wasn't able to watch Married with Children until I was until I was much older. It was too adult.
They never aired those. They had two kids. They didn't like the way that they played it. They got the other two kids, and
not surprising.
I of course watched Married with Children because that was the early days of Fox.
Yeah.
Fox only came on Sunday nights.
Yeah, it would it paired well with Simpsons.
Uh-huh. You had, well, back then, Living Color. It was
Yes.
It was Tracy Ullman's show.
Jazzy Jeff.
Yeah, so if you wanted to see the Simpsons, you had to watch the Tracy Ullman show. Yeah.
Hanging out with the Slapper from Beverly Hills. Slapper.
Sunday nights were great on Fox.
Oh, I love Fire Marshal Bill.
No Jim Carrey. No Jim Carrey at this table.
Yeah, come on. They're great. I'm going to watch a thing about a little background on those guys and who came up with their characters. Did they just have writers, or was it?
They did a lot of their own.
Yeah, they were writer-actors.
I was
going
to say them because a lot of the Carrey stuff was out there. Like the Viracosa, that was so, if you think about that now, so far behind it, beyond its time.
Yes.
Like him playing this, roided out lady, you know, that's doing all that.
Early 90s, different time too.
Different time, different place. Yeah, exactly.
But that wasn't, I mean, back then you had a lot of, that stuff was peppered in a lot of shows back in then. Yeah. Look at Dodgeball. Dodgeball had it. You always had the girls who were roided out and were playing sports.
But that was much later though.
Yeah, Dodgeball was thousands.
The crescendo for me for television to where it started kind of crossing the line was when you saw David, or no, what's his name? It was the NYPD guys, and it was what's his name's butt.
Sipowicz.
Sipowicz. When Sipowicz's Sipowicz's butt.
That's
on TV.
When television changed.
No, that
was huge.
I think that was. That was your first live primetime like butt scene.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was all over the news.
Yeah.
That was radio news I was going to school, and they were talking about that. And they were like, NYPD Blue is showing bare bottoms on television. Yeah. And it was like, oh, my God.
And he was,
God.
Like, square. He had the knobs. That was something else. But those cone heads.
Yeah. All right. Our next segment. Give me the juice.
Give me the juice.
Megs, what you been watching, reading, animal watching? I don't know.
Ooh. I watched the new Roadhouse.
Oh.
I'm going to say I love the fight scenes. I think they're great.
Okay.
It's a pretty stupid movie, but it's not horrible, and it's terribly watchable because Jake Gyllenhaal, it looks amazing.
Yeah, I don't know.
He looks amazing. And what's his name? That little Conor McGregor, he is hilarious in that movie.
Really?
He does a great job. But the movie itself, I mean, it just, you kind of have, there's that whole, you have to just, there's a huge disbelief.
You have to
where
ignore
you're just like,
a lot of
Yeah, you have to ignore a lot of stuff. Know. Because at least in the original Roadhouse, it's kind of this down south. Mm-hmm. It's a bunch of cowboys, hicks fighting it up. You're like, okay.
It's like the Texas-Louisiana border.
Yeah. They're like, that makes sense.
This is a tropical paradise. Where there's just a bunch of rednecks somehow fighting all the time.
They're just
and somebody said,
fighting.
No, it makes sense. I was like, no, it doesn't make any fucking sense.
It doesn't make any sense. The fighting was really over the top for the locale, like, and especially in today's society. In Florida, it's going to be a fucking drive-by. That's all it's going to be.
And the bad guy sucked, man.
I love that bad guy.
He sucked.
That's the guy. I love that actor.
I like the actor, but he sucked in this
movie. I thought he was great.
Anyways.
I don't know, because he does the young Pablo Escobar.
Not that guy.
Okay.
The one is...
It's the guy from Get Shorty, the TV show. He was on the first episode. That's what I know him from. Mm. But I liked him. I thought he was fine. It's just, you have to really suspend the beliefs, you know, like it doesn't really make sense.
Patrick Swayze is the only one I know.
Jake Gyllenhaal looks really good.
Yeah, I've seen the
pictures.
I don't
give a fuck about that. What the fuck do I care? They don't give me any eye candy.
Oh, there's a little gal in there.
No.
She makes no sense, though.
It's a chick from Suicide Squad. That's the rat catcher.
It's the rat catcher.
Oh.
She's like the doctor interest in this.
She was incredibly poor casting. Yeah.
And then the chick is
She just doesn't make sense.
She's just a name.
Didn't make sense.
Yeah. The chick that owns the place is the one from The Bear. She's the cook, the other cook. And it's just like
Edie or I don't know.
The rat catcher was a horrible casting choice because I didn't understand her. Like, she had more of an accent than her father did, but but she grew up there. But why is her accent thicker than her father's accent? And he grew up there. Like, there, she's like third generation or fourth generation Floridian. But she has this like really thick accent. It's like, did your father send you away for a while? Like, where'd you go?
So
what's going
go
on?
Go away.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
Get out of here.
All right. So Roadhouse, okay.
Yeah. But she's really good looking.
Yeah. Yeah.
So for a lady, anybody needs a lady to look at. If you need a lady to look at, she's very pretty.
She's not.
I think she's good looking, but.
Well, she is better looking than what's his name's wife or whatever. Patrick Swayze's lady in the
Kelly thing. Lynch?
I was not a Kelly Lynch fan. Let's go ahead and say
I love Kelly Lynch.
I'm not into it. That's not my type of stuff. I don't care.
That's not your type of stuff?
My type of thing.
Josh, what about you?
So it's not over, but I have been watching Shogun. I really enjoy Shogun.
It's fucking fantastic.
It's fantastic. So I did watch an older movie recently. I told you about this earlier. You don't like it because the Beatles are fucking singing it. But Yesterday, where the guy,
gets into an accident.
But no, it's not just that. There's a solar flare that knocks out the power on the entire planet. and only he knows about the Beatles,
yeah,
Coca-Cola, Harry Potter, and the and because he knows about the Beatles, he knows about Oasis because they are, yeah.
Yeah, they're but the Beatles movie of is the 90s.
The movie is good. I enjoy the movie a lot. It's got, what's her name from SNL, which I'm not a real fan of, Kate McKinnon.
I love Kate McKinnon.
I don't fucking like her. I don't care.
What is wrong with you?
I don't like her. She can't act. She does the same thing every time. It's fine. It's
I'm
okay.
Not, I'm not going to disagree anyways, with Josh in that the she movie. Does the it same is, thing.
I love her. Love story.
I love her.
You do get a rendition of John Lennon at one point in. This is pretty cool in my opinion. I'm not going to really divulge more into that. But yeah, that's what I watched recently amongst fucking probably 38 other things, but a lot of it's anime, and this is not that kind of podcast because the other two people don't know what the fuck I'm talking about half the time.
No,
so.
No,
it's
but,
okay though.
But that I'd like to watch anime and then discuss it with people who know, but I'll leave that alone.
That's bar talk. And what about you, Trevor? What do you got?
I recently watched
Three Bodies, didn't you?
No, no,
motherfucker. That was my guess.
No, no, nope. I
couldn't watch that.
I'm not getting into it. It's very esoteric. It's really like you have to. What I know is that there's like three storylines going on at once, so it's.
It's like Sci-Fi Supreme.
Yeah. I don't want to step into it. I'll probably let that die out because if it's successful, then they'll do another season. This first season isn't even going to be the whole story anyways.
Okay.
I'm not getting into it
anyway, yet. Sorry, what were we watching?
I watched a pretty cool movie called Out of Darkness. The premise is it is set in before 10,000 BC, maybe right around there, where humans... You know, I should say Homo sapien has now sort of starting to flourish and go and seek. And it's about a small clan who try and find a new home. And during the night, they hear some creepy ass shit and a small child of the clan gets taken and they go in search of this child that was abducted by this unknown figure or entity.
Oh,
it was fantastic.
Really?
Yes. It is the twist is fantastic. The end twist of what the entity turns out to be is phenomenal. I really enjoyed it. I thought they did a really good job at selling the horror on it.
Oh, I'll have to check that out.
Yeah. I believe it was released last year.
It says 2022?
Oh, is it 2022? Okay.
Yeah, 2022.
Yeah,
okay.
Looks very interesting.
I'm not sure how it was released, but I know I had seen it for being out in American theaters in 23.
Okay.
So it may have been it may have been released in 2022 and maybe in some festivals, but I think it just it's made its way here
later.
Yeah, and I it's been in my queue for a while, and I was fine. Like I'm gonna watch it.
Yeah, that's what my problem with my queue is that sometimes I forget to look at that.
Yeah.
And I'm always looking for something new to watch, yes. But I forget to go back and look at what's in my queue.
Yeah, you're like,
and I'm like, oh, fuck.
I could be watching this.
Yeah,
but I had in my queue like
I have a so year many ago. Things in there. Yeah, like maybe I should watch some of those.
Josh, unfortunately, we do not have any reviews for you to read.
He was really looking forward to that.
I know. I could see the tears in his eyes.
There's a little bit.
Yep, a little bit.
It's because I'm a great actor.
Yep, you are. If you like to, you go out there and leave us reviews. You can leave comments on Spotify. You can leave a review on Audible. You could even email us at the Amateur Movie Review Hour at gmail.com and follow the Instagram at the Amateur Movie Review Hour. I don't have anything else to plug.
I don't have anything to plug.
Okay. All right. Neither does Josh. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed it, and check you later.
Check you later.
Oh, one last thing. Sorry, not plug, but make sure we are, if anybody listens to this, supporting movies, not just by watching them on Netflix and things like that, but actually going to the theaters, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
keep theaters alive.
You got to keep it alive, because eventually it's just going to be at home, and you're not going to be able to watch things on a one-story like screen like that. It's just going to be gone. You know what I mean? I'm not. I don't.
100%.
Listen, fuck the people that make all the money. I don't give a shit about that. They need to make money. Well, they don't need. They don't. It's about the art. It's about giving us entertainment. You know what I mean? And if we don't go in and represent ourselves as people that like certain things, just because we're waiting for it to come out and, you know, be cheap, then you're not really representing art.
I agree with that sentiment. Yeah. I believe that. And
like this week, I'm going to go watch, I don't know how good Ghostbusters is going to be, but I'm going to go watch that this week, and also go watch Godzilla.
Yes.
King Kong, New Kingdom. Yes.
It'll be something.
If Godzilla Minus One is still out there, watch that, because that is a great movie.
Yes. Even if it happens to be crap movies, it keeps the art alive, because people will be inspired. Even though you might not think it's great, somebody else might, and it inspires them to make something that could be great. I agree with Josh's sentiment.
Ditto.
Yeah. Check you later.
Check you later.
And good night.